Well, good afternoon, everyone, and to you on the webcast as well. Crown of Thorns is the title. Last week we sang the hymn, Crown Him with Many Crowns. And normally that makes me think of that verse in Revelation 19:11. Don't turn there, we'll turn to some others. And I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war. His eyes are a flame of fire, and on his head are many crowns. And he has a name written on him which no man knows except himself. But we know that Jesus wore a different crown during his trial and crucifixion, a crown of thorns, which we don't normally think of in the context of Revelation 19. Do you notice a feedback here? Okay. You'll work it out. Well, what's the significance of a crown of thorns? Is there any symbolism in the Bible with crown of thorns? Let's explore that subject of thorns to see what the Bible reveals. We first encounter thorns in the book of Genesis. Adam and Eve have eaten the forbidden fruit, and God is sentencing them. So if you would turn to Genesis 3:17, where God says, Then to Adam he said, Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, You shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. With hard labor you shall eat from it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, yet you shall eat the plants of the field. That's the first place that thorns are mentioned. Technically, it was the ground that was cursed, not Adam. You might expect that a curse on Adam would have expired when Adam died, but this curse is on the ground, meaning it's on everyone after Adam as well. And the Hebrew here reveals a little wordplay. The man's name was Adam, and the word for ground is Adama. He was named Adam because he was taken from Adama. So cursed is the Adama for your sake. That might be a little tangent. Okay, so some information about thorns. They grow on bushes and on trees. The buckthorn tree seems to be the most hated in the state of Minnesota. And it's not even a native species. I was talking to a member here last week who described a buckthorn as pernicious, hard to kill, and it crowds out other trees, more desirable trees. The honey locust tree, which grows from Iowa southward, has thorns 4 to 8 inches long. And besides trees like the buckthorn and honey locust, there are varieties of thorn bushes as well, some of them sold as ornamental hedges. And there are many varieties of thistle, the buck thistle, cockle burr, raspberry, and blackberry. The Bible has 21 different words for thorns and thistles. And despite Jeremiah 12:13, don't bother to turn there, they have sown wheat but shall reap thorns. Now, I've never seen thorns in a garden, but I've pulled thistles. I'm sure we all have. Well, one type of thorn tree mentioned in the Bible by name is the acacia. The acacia is the only wood used to build furniture in the tabernacle, including the Ark of the Covenant. which was overlaid with gold. Acacia is, this is a quote, thorny. The wood is dense. The grain of the wood is gnarly and changes direction. However, it is resistant to decay and unpalatable to insects, making an ideal building material for building items that would need to be durable and long-lasting, such as the tabernacle and the furniture. But it's difficult to work with. In a sense, we are like acacia wood, gnarly and difficult, but God plans to cover us with gold. So, thorns are a curse. Many of life's difficulties can be pictured by thorns. In Proverbs 22:5, we read, "Thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. One who guards himself will be far from them." So consider expressions involving thorns. We talk about a thorn in the flesh or a thorn in the side. We talk about a thorny issue, a thorny problem. There's an expression, "There is no rose without a thorn." And there's even an expression, "A bed of thorns." I'm expecting you wouldn't get a good night's sleep on that. And problem people are called thorns. For example, in Numbers 33, verse 55, "But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as barbs in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall trouble you in the land where you dwell. And some translations read, "thorn in your eyes." Or consider the words in the English language that can be used to describe characteristics of people. Obviously, we've already covered thorny, but prickly. Maybe someone has a sharp tongue. Maybe they're abrasive, like thistles. How about sarcastic? The word sarcasm comes from the Greek word for sarx and a verb that I can't pronounce, which means to tear flesh. A sarcastic remark, therefore, is one that pulls off flesh. That is, a remark that hurts. Does that sound like a thorn? Well, what's to become of thorns and briars? Well, they're to be destroyed, burned up. In Hebrews 6, verse 8, we read, "But if it, the ground, yields thorns and thistles, it is worthless and close to being cursed, and it ends up being burned." But we're promised in the kingdom no more thorns, no more briars. In Ezekiel 28:24, it says, "And there will no longer be for the house of Israel a painful thorn or a hurtful thorn bush from any surrounding them who despised them. Then they will know that I am the Lord." So the question is, how will the curse of thorns be lifted? And it's because thorns will be removed because Christ took that curse on himself. If you would turn to Matthew 27:27, it says, "Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole Roman cohort to him, and they stripped him and they put a red cloak on him. And after twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and put a reed in his right hand. And they knelt down before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." Not like what we read in Revelation 19. These were Roman soldiers. They were no doubt not gentle about the way they put that crown of thorns on his head. They likely pressed it down hard. It's like the sacrifices in the tabernacle. This is a quote from a book that says, after the animal has been presented and has passed the priest's inspection, the worshiper lays his hand on the animal's head, pressing down on it heavily. The Hebrew verb for this gesture, samak, denotes more than just merely laying one's hand on the animal, but rather means to press down or lean on with heavy pressure. In Leviticus 1:4, I'm still quoting from the book, reads, "Then he shall lean, samak, his hand on the head of the ascension offering, and it will be accepted on his behalf to make atonement for him." The result of this gesture, therefore, the animal now stands as a vicarious substitute for the worshiper, with the specific end of making atonement on his behalf. That is, presenting the Israelite before God, reconciled and accepted. But the key idea is that he pressed heavily on that animal. So, in a sense, thorns are a curse and a symbol of a curse in Genesis 3. Remember, that's where the earth was cursed. If we read Galatians 3:13, it says that Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law, having become a curse for us. For it is written, "Cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree." But Revelation 22, verse 3 says, "And there shall be no more curse." And that's because that curse of thorns in Genesis 3 was put on Christ's head, and he took that curse on himself. So what started in one garden, Eden, ended in another garden, Gethsemane. It didn't strictly end then, but the beginning of the end, if you know what I mean. Where Eden means delight, or finery, or luxury, and Gethsemane means oil press, a place where Christ was bruised and crushed. What began with Adam will end with Jesus, the second Adam. Luke calls Adam the Son of God, and Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man. So here's my conclusion to this thorny issue. I can get anxious when I'm reading headlines and watching world events. But when I see the wonders in God's word, like the symbolism of the crown of thorns, it calms me down knowing that God is in charge. But we're nearly done keeping the days of unleavened bread, which is a memorial of Israel leaving Egypt, which pictures each of us making a journey from slavery to freedom, a journey which takes a lifetime. We can't escape from slavery to sin on our own any more than the Israelites could escape from Egypt on their own. Neither can we undo the curse of thorns placed on the earth 6,000 years ago. Only Jesus could do that by taking that crown of thorns on his own head. Sometimes we have to listen to what Moses told Israel before they crossed the Red Sea. This is Exodus 14, 13. And Moses said to the people, "Fear not. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord,